This is A Wild Conversation.
Hi, my name is Callum Hughes. I'm a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And I'm Ashley Wysick, also a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And today on A Wild Conversation, we're joined by a guest speaker who's a wildlife technician, Mitch Gardner, with WPC.
Yep, and that stands for Wildlife Preservation Canada.
Woo!
That's pretty awesome to have you on the show. I'm super excited to talk about the projects that you're involved with.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. But why don't you tell us a bit about yourself? What got you into this field?
So right now, I'm working on the Taylor's Checker Spot Recovery Project at the Greater Vancouver Zoo here. And basically how I got into butterfly conservation was through, I guess, just tall grass prairie stewardship. So I started off, I sowed my oats doing tall grass prairie stewardship in Ontario.
Cool.
And of course, in these kind of open environments, there are lots of species, a lot of rare species, birds, butterflies, insects, all kinds of vegetation. And so I kind of fell in love with all these different species. And there's a lot of different unique plants as well. And all of that attracts very interesting looking butterflies. So I kind of fell into the mottled dusky wing recovery project, which is a tall grass endemic species in Ontario and sort of eastern North America. So it's a very at risk, it's an endangered butterfly throughout Canada. And essentially there is a few small populations in Ontario, and I was kind of helping to monitor those. And that's sort of when I became linked up with Wildlife Preservation Canada. And so I worked on that project for a few years in a few different ways.
Right.
And actually helped, we did a reintroduction. We basically reintroduced a population into Pinery Provincial Park, and that's of the mottled dusky wing. So basically, we bred them in captivity, and then we released them in Pinery last summer. And we just got news not too long ago that they actually found some adults flying around. So that means that they made it, because they overwinter here. Yeah,
that's really exciting.
Yeah,
and so you're like a butterfly pro.
Sort of. Yeah, I mean, working.
Or on your way.
Yeah, on my way. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I didn't necessarily think of that as what I would be doing. I didn't, when I was a kid, I definitely wanted to be a paleontologist. I didn't think of butterflies.
Oh, you and Cal get along very well.
I feel like a lot of people in this field started off as amateur paleontologists.
Except for me.
Yeah. No, you don't like dinosaurs, eh?
They're really cool, but they were never my thing. I'm the odd one out.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, it's very odd. I feel like Land Before Time and Jurassic Park were definitely the inspiration.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I am really glad you're on the show today. Do not ask Ashley about naming dinosaurs.
Oh, don't ask me about naming them.
It'll upset
T-Rex,
you.
Velociraptor. That's
Greg.
That's basically,
no.
Yeah, Greg. Oh, naming them. Oh, I see.
Oh. Cal's got a little bit of trauma from our last episode. It's fine.
But I got to get back to that. The fact that you're taking animals or breeding animals and releasing them back into the wild in sites where they've been wiped out or their numbers are lower, that's so cool to me. That's like the
super cool.
Leaving the mark. You're doing the thing that zoos are working towards, but you've got that hands-on on that department that actually makes those contributions to local populations of endangered species. And
sure, yeah.
How does that feel?
I actually have a question.
Yeah.
Do you ever use a tiny little paintbrush to do your work?
Yeah, actually.
Oh my God, it's real.
Yeah.
Cal always talks about the little tiny paintbrush that scientists use out in the field, and I had to ask.
I mean, it was
it's real, a
very normal sized small paintbrush that you would use in painting. But I'm wrong. I'm thinking of we'd use like a little probe sort of thing as a paintbrush.
Okay.
But in my head, it was a paintbrush.
Okay, that's fine. I had to. It was in my brain.
Yeah, just to explain that.
Sorry.
In a previous podcast when we were talking about when animals, I think, go sci-fi, we were talking about how you can engineer swarming behavior in locusts by brushing their legs with a paintbrush every so often.
I swear that like every now and then in different things it talks about like using a paintbrush with pollen. Like I think you talked about trees and pollinating them by paintbrush. And
I
like,
did.
Right? Like it just keeps coming up and I'm fascinated.
Why we would have to do that if we didn't have pollinators. Like the butterflies that you're speaking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting totally sidetracked.
I got to ask you, though, how does it feel when you find out that a species that you've released at a picked site is starting to take off by itself? Like, it's not needing human help. It's reproducing. What's that like?
With the model duskywing there, the previous species I worked with the WPC, this was sort of the first time I've experienced that. It was our pilot year of the project. And it was amazing. It was really cool. It felt like, because you just never know, right? I mean, you're putting in all of this work and you just, these projects can take years before there's any real success, right? And our plan there was essentially to try everything the first year, see what works or what doesn't work, and reformulate for the next year if it doesn't work, or highlight the stuff that we think worked and moving forward if it did work. And it did work. So that makes me very happy. Of course, it's a big relief because kind of later on in the season, you're thinking like, geez, did we do it right? You know, is this going to be fruitful, right? And it was. So that was very cool. We definitely learned a lot through monitoring them. And I personally learned a lot through that. And I'm kind of hoping to basically take that knowledge from the model duskywing in Ontario and bring that to the Taylor's checker spot in British Columbia, because there's a lot of crossover too in their basically their habitat requirements. So the model duskywing is endemic to tall grass prairies, and the Taylor's checker spot requires Gary Oak ecosystems, which are very similar. Both of them are essentially open areas characterized by sporadic oak trees, deciduous oak trees, and then all kinds of different diverse flora on the sort of understory. And they are all associated with high insect diversity. There are essentially just a few of those sites, Gary Oak sites, left on Vancouver Island, and that's where we do some of our releases and monitoring.
Oh, that's cool. So are you also going to be involved in the release this year of these guys?
I moved out here in, I think it was end of April, early May. And so they actually released a little just before I got here. So they released in, I believe, April and maybe even March.
Okay.
So we released them as larvae or caterpillars, as most people would kind of refer to them as. So what we do here at the zoo is right now, and it's actually starting very soon, we breed. So we have some wild caught, we collect some wild caught larvae, and we retain some ones that we've bred from last year. And essentially we breed all of these together, and we produce, basically we take the butterflies, we breed them, we produce more caterpillars, and then we release them as caterpillars in the spring. So they overwinter in Vancouver or here. They're a species that doesn't migrate. So basically they go into something called diapause.
Okay.
In the fall. We are just having our first few enclosures. I think we had 11. Eclosure just means emerging for a butterfly. So they just, 11 of them emerged today. It's actually my day off today. And so I got the text from Andrea, our lead biologist, and she said 11 eclosed and 4 eclosed yesterday. And so basically...
That's exciting.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's really exciting, and they're really cool. It's awesome to work with the new species. And of course, just seeing them from larva to pupa and now butterfly is amazing.
Watching them grow up.
It's really cool. And they're really kind of cute. Like they really want to crawl all over you. They're pretty docile. Yeah, it's not like in the wild when you see them, they can be, depending on the species, they can be pretty like hard to get close to. But these ones, you really do feel like you're like a parent. It's really cute, yeah.
That's so cute.
And so we're going to breed them, and they're going to produce eggs and then caterpillars. And then essentially those caterpillars are going to more or less hibernate, which is what diapausing is, through most of the winter. And then they should wake up in basically early March or so, and then they'll start eating again, and then we will release them as larvae. And sort of we do Denman Island, around Comox on Vancouver Island, and Hornby Island.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. So Taylor checker spots aren't actually found on the mainland?
No, BC? Yeah, not anymore. There may have been a time when they were.
A long time ago.
I'm not 100% sure on that, but at this point we know that they have existed
Vancouver Island.
Yeah, Vancouver Island.
That's really cool.
That's basically where all of the Gary Oak ecosystem was. And I was reading last night, actually, because I was, again, I've never seen Gary Oak ecosystem, but I'm sure, like, I know exactly what it would look like just because I'm sure it looks very similar to Tall Grass Prairie in Ontario. But it's sort of, just like a lot of things, where it would be on the island would have fluctuated throughout the years, right? Because a lot of it is forested, as you know, and forest always wants to take over open areas, right?
Right.
It's actually one of the threats to the Taylor's Checker Spot would be what's called succession, which is when a forest takes over an open area. And so First Nations people on that island would have historically burned the island, certain parts of the island, for culturally significant plants to kind of cultivate those. That was a practice that they used. And they would just, fires would just happen, just like they do in nature. And we have been suppressing fires for about 100 or so years now. And so because of that, a lot of formerly open areas, which would have supported species like the Taylor's Checker Spot butterfly and other open area species, have since began to basically just turn back into forests.
Right.
So that is another, that's kind of one of their primary threats. So we do have, I guess we do kind of take part in restoration as well. And again, that's how I kind of bring it full circle, is that's sort of how I got into this in the first place, was restoring the habitat for the model Dutch.
Oh my gosh, so you got into butterflies accidentally.
Yes, it was totally accidental.
I got into zookeeping accidentally. We're soulmates.
That's kind of cool that you talk about like how natural fires are important. I had a professor at university who would say how much he hated Smokey the Bear. Not butterflies or conservation.
Okay.
Probably not a good professor for that field.
Yeah, no kidding.
He would say he hated Smokey the Bear, and one of his slides would be a Smokey the Bear at a therapy session. He said, honestly, I didn't realize, I never figured there weren't that many careless campers, you know? And succession, how it's important, like there's a bird called the woodcock in eastern United States that relies on that
them.
Too.
Yeah.
You've worked with woodcock as well?
Totally, yeah. I haven't worked with them, but I would see them all the time. In these tall grass ecosystems, you'd see them. I mean, they're hard to see because they're really beautifully camouflaged, but you would just see this really kind of nice eye sticking out, basically.
Yeah.
Or they take off flying, and you can hear them. This is another kind of an eastern thing, but when you're at night in the springtime, you can hear them. They do like sort of a mating display, and you hear them flying around in big circles above you. It's really
interesting.
Cool.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds cool. Really cool.
That's so funny. Have you seen the way they do that strut walk?
Yeah,
that kind of like back and forth, kind of like really groovy.
This little doodle, they call them timber doodles.
Timber
doodles, yeah. It's just pretty cute.
I like that name
so very
much.
Cute. Yeah.
That's the word of the day. It's
timber doodle. Yeah, yeah. Timber doodle.
I did not know a timber doodle was an animal. My life is complete.
It's not an animal. It's a dance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's the name of a dance.
I thought the bird was called a timber doodle.
I call it a doodle, the dance a doodle, and people do call it a timber doodle, the bird.
That's amazing.
Which is interesting.
There
I don't like. It's such an odd thing to call it. Just it seems like you didn't know what someone saw it that didn't know birds, and they went, it's a timber doodle, you know, like they didn't know what to say, kind of thing.
Doodle.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that name. Scientists are amazing. Sorry.
I also know that WPC works with other species as well. And you here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo, at their conservation corner, a lot of people ask about the black tubs over there.
Yeah.
The other species you work with are the Western Painted Turtle.
That's right.
And the Oregon Spotted Frog, right?
Yeah. So that's what we would have. We would have in the conservation corner, most of those tubs are dedicated to the Oregon Spotted Frog. Mm-hmm. We do have a couple of outreach turtles that are very close to the fence in one of the last black tubs. But mostly we have tadpoles in there. We have tadpoles, and then we have along the furthest edge, we have some adult Oregon spotted frogs. And so we basically have sort of naturalized tanks there. And something I learned from Andrea the other day. Andrea is our lead biologist, so she's basically the one who sort of oversees everything essentially comes up with the genius ideas for raising these things that kind of turn out really well. I guess I was kind of asking her about some of the numbers because I figured you guys might want to know some of the release numbers over the last few years.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And I don't have them for the Turtles. I was kind of looking for the information. It seemed like a few hundred last year for the Turtles. But for tadpoles, essentially, the Oregon spotted frog, I believe it's been a project since 1999. And for the first 20 years or so of the project, they released about 1,000 tadpoles a year. And then a couple of years ago, Andrea basically started to implement more natural sort of ecosystem functions into raising them. So like if you were to look into one of those tanks, it wouldn't look like a pet store where it, no offense to pet stores, but it wouldn't look like just a tank with, you know, like a food source and, you know, like a castle or something like that in it, right? It's yeah. got, they've got duckweed and they've got a whole biome of Daphnia and different kinds of macro sort of invertebrates in there.
Yeah, I've been in there before.
They're cool.
Gorgeous. Have you ever been in there?
I have never been in there.
You got to pay a visit. They're really cool.
They're terrified. Yeah, you just check because it out. Like all these tanks full of endangered species ready to be released. It's like walking around a China shop. And
they're pretty hardy. And there's a lot going on in there, right? And I stuck a GoPro camera in the frog one specifically, and there's a lot of life underneath the surface of the water. And we've got these really cool floaties which have plants on them, so it kind of imitates floating moss and plants and stuff like that that you would find in a wetland.
That's
and
so cool.
When she introduced this stuff, essentially that it increased the output so much. So they're now releasing around, I think she said 20,000 a year.
Holy
20,000 a year.
From 1,000 a year.
Yeah, so 20,000 or
20 times.
20 times more, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that kind
That's amazing.
For me, that was interesting because, you know, like as someone in conservation, you hear about ecosystem function and how important ecosystems are to conservation and our world, right? To me, that was just a really obvious example of that, right? I mean, she kind of naturalized these tanks, and there was really, really, truly a system going on. The difference wasn't just a minor increase, like plus one frost
huge.
Resistance, you know?
Yeah, it was huge.
Like huge, you know?
Went up like 7 levels.
Yeah. It went up. Yeah, it was like Super Mario with the star kind of thing. Yeah. But yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was, and so we also raise, Western painted turtles. So we've got in our animal care center, I'm not sure if you guys have seen it, but we've got a bunch of different tanks, smaller tanks,
couple.
Full yeah. of little various aged, very small turtles. And basically with those, we release them, we breed them and we release them, but we also do a head starting program. So that is essentially where we will, if we monitor for egg laying in the wild, right? And then we'll take some of those eggs and then we'll raise them ourselves, right? And kind of basically put them on a good diet and make sure they're taken care of and increase the survival rate. Because oftentimes with species, as you guys probably know, a lot of the mortality happens at a younger age,
when
right?
they're quite
yeah.
little.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you can increase the survivorship in those ages, you can really help the population out because as you know, as they get older, their chances of dying decrease and how much they contribute to their population also increases as they get older.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
I've heard a lot of places do that with reptiles like crocodiles and sea turtles and it's a really good way to just increase their chances.
Yeah, because if you can just get them past that first, like, even 3 to 4 months, their chances of making it are so much higher, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I got to ask you, if you are working there in Conservation Corner, a lot of people, like, they want to ask you, but they also know that you guys are, like, super busy and probably worried that you'll drop something if they say anything. What would you say to those people?
I would say give us a shout, you know, come over and you know, talk to us, ask us what we're doing. That's really one of the best parts of the job is talking to people who are interested in what we're doing and possibly helping people to find their own passion for nature, right? Mm-hmm. I really like the idea of, you know, helping someone to understand things a little more and maybe find their own love for this stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, we're definitely busy, but we're usually doing something that's totally explainable. And sometimes if you catch us at the right time, we can even show you the species in person, right?
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's depending on what we're doing, we are often able to do that. Because I know it does definitely look a little bit mysterious. You see all of these lines of black tubs, and you can't see inside of them, and they're all covered in things. And we've got turkey basters and cups and stuff like that.
It's great. You guys might look sketchy.
Totally. We do. Someone look sketchy, comes up. Yeah.
Thought about it that way.
How's the fifth batch coming? Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a good percentage right there.
We got some strange like green goo. Yeah. But yeah, if you're at the zoo and you feel that and you see us and you think those people look mysterious, what are they doing? Come ask us, because we'd love to talk.
Can I make a request? For sure. Halloween, can you guys like dress up in the hazmat suits?
One
of you dress up as Walter White for Breaking Bad.
Yeah. That's actually a really good idea. Yeah,
mad scientist. We'll.
Sure. Let's see if Andrea will be on board with that.
Oh,
that would be awesome.
I also have to ask, do you guys take volunteers at any point to help with releases of any of your species, in case anyone was interested?
So we work with, if you're interested in volunteering, there's all kinds of different positions sort of as needed that will pop up. And you can visit the WPC website. There's some more information about exact opportunities for volunteering. I know that we have one volunteer that comes in. We have a few volunteers actually through the zoo that sort of help us with, cleaning the turtles and stuff like that, and feeding the turtles and that sort of work. I believe that for the Taylor's checker spot larva, that there are volunteers that help us on the islands where we release them. They take part in the releases, because we release over 1,000 caterpillars each year, and that's increasing. It's been essentially exponentially increasing.
Nice.
That's exciting.
It is. It's very exciting. So with more things to release, we need more hands. And caterpillar releasing is pretty tedious. You definitely need to, each one really does need to be kind of taken care of. I've done that for other species, and volunteers are definitely needed. And there's all kinds of opportunities that I'm not even mentioning here. So you should definitely, if you're interested in volunteering, definitely go to the WPC website, there should be some contact information there.
Awesome.
Cool. There you go.
And I got to ask both of you guys, what do you think of the beer? The beer that's supporting the checkered spotted butterfly conservation?
I don't drink.
Oh.
No.
Don't worry, I'll drink one for you.
I'm very boring.
That's not boring. It's totally fine, honestly.
I'm not a huge fruit-flavored beer guy. Some of them I like. There's a fine balance, though. I think it starts to tip over for me. It's a controversial beer. I love the idea, and I appreciate the brewery for helping us out. That's Raven Brewing. And I think everyone should definitely try it to see what they think. It's a fruited sour. So it's definitely a controversial beer flavor. I think. Yeah.
Me, I'm loving it.
Just
I'm a cider guy. I like sweet drinks. I'm not big on, I love sweet stuff. So
like
for me, it's
chocolate.
Yeah, there you go. For me, it's like a beer that's trying to be a cider. And I even heard that they're changing the flavor at different times of the year as well.
Mm.
So if you didn't like it the first time, give it another chance. It's totally a different beer. It's changed now. It's a better beer for you.
See, the nice thing I find is that now I have a beer to bring to like family venues. And they're like, haha, now we can talk about my work.
True.
Right? Yeah.
There you go. And for me, there's like this moral superiority while you're drinking it. Hi, what are you drinking? Oh, that's nice. Well, I'm drinking a beer that supports conservation for endangered species of checkered butterfly in the local population.
Charity beer,
Does yours help out any need? No? Oh, okay.
You know, this person you talk about as yourself, I've never met this person who likes to, like, pointedly make other people feel bad about themselves. I've never met this version of Cal.
This person can't go to work because I wouldn't get along well with my colleagues, and I want your respect and want to work well with you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Well, I gotta say, is there anything else you want to share with us? Like, any other species that you want to work with WPC? I know there's been, like, some really good and successful reintroductions for burrowing owls, swift foxes, and the shrike right now as well.
Yeah, so that's the shrike is a very interesting species, and that was
crazy.
They're butcher birds, is what they call them.
I love them.
I had the opportunity to basically just kind of go and see what they were doing for that project. That was actually, I think, my first introduction to Wildlife Preservation Canada. I was working with Nature Conservancy of Canada, which is a large land trust, and we were sort of, WPC was sort of conducting their shrike work on the Napanee Plains Alvar, that's an NCC property, and so that was kind of more cooperative work, right? And as an employee with the NCC, that's sort of how I was introduced to WPC. I know I'm just using a lot of acronyms here. And we basically just watched them band these shrikes, and we were at their field site where they would essentially have, from my understanding, again, this is just from watching it happen over the course of the day, but they have basically sort of an outdoor sort of hutch thing where they keep them, and they sort of become acclimated to the climate, and then they raise them there and then release them. And they have them banded so they can monitor them. Yeah, it was really cool. And so while we were there, I'm definitely a naturalist by, that's in my heart, I'm a naturalist. First and foremost, and so I'm always bird watching. I have my birds in my backpack in my car right now, or my binos. Did I say birds?
Yeah.
I don't have any birds in my backpack.
Go out and binos. Watch my birds in my car.
But we saw a loggerhead shrike, and it was actually like running around with an eastern meadowlark, which is another SAR. So it was very cool. Yeah, it was a cool lifer.
I gotta ask this because you guys brought this up. It's called the butcher bird, and actually, your eyes flared up. What were you thinking to share with us?
No, it's fine. Have you ever heard of shrikes? Have you heard of the things that they do?
I have heard, but I think you need to explain with us.
I don't even know if I can explain it right. Like, my boyfriend is a falconer.
Cool.
He works with birds. Cool. He's like an aspiring ornithologist. Mm. And when he talks about shrikes, like, you thought I looked excited. I got excited because I was thinking about Dylan talking about shrikes. You know what they do, right, Mitch?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to talk about it? Because I don't want to get it wrong.
Sure. I mean, to my knowledge, I'm sure you would have explained it perfectly well.
I don't know, man.
They call them the butcher bird because they basically impale small insects and rodents and their prey on barbed wire fences, right? And other sort of sharp like hawthorns and sharp trees like that have sort of spikes on them. And then they cache them there for later, and then they'll come eat them off of that.
But it just looks like a threat. It's pretty mad. Like, this is my territory. You coming in here? I don't think so.
Man, that is...
Isn't it amazing?
That's pretty brutal.
It
is. It's very interesting. And so they're associated with, again, another open area. I'm using open areas as sort of a broad classification of things like alvars and prairies and plains and sort of old farm fields.
Butcher birds.
And butcher birds.
Sorry.
So the species like that, they need, specifically the butcher bird, they need like spikes to hang things on, right? So that's, they use, they kind of lived in conjunction with basically like livestock, right? So people with barbed wire fences and a lot of times things like hawthorns and all kinds of prickly plants grow in open areas like that. That's usually what they're acclimated to. So those kind of areas are very important for things like the butcher bird.
That's crazy. They're so cool. It's a very cool bird.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to, you know, quickly shout out some of the people I work with. So, as you know, I'm Mitch. I kind of work personally with the butterflies, if you haven't picked that up already. my coworker is Jody.
Jody?
She's another wildlife technician. And she basically does a lot of... She helps with everything, kind of similarly. She helps out... She focuses on the turtles. She does a lot of the turtle monitoring that's going to be picking up and actually is kind of picking up right now. And then Andrea is our lead biologist, and she's really, she's got some really awesome ideas. If you check out the Conservation Corner and you look around at kind of the interesting stuff we've got set up, she's basically figured that all out on her own. And has just made things work, and she's really resourceful. So it's really cool to work
with. So if someone comes to the zoo and they head up there, it's probably one of you three in that conservation corner?
Yes, yeah, it's always going to be. And I think there's going to be a few more staff working with us later in the season, too. I haven't met any of them yet.
Getting some extra help.
Yeah, so.
So I got to ask, how do you feel about being on the podcast of the zoo?
With us.
Yeah, with us.
Well, it's pretty cool. I spent a lot of my time in the conservation corner, so it's cool to kind of get to know some of the other zoo staff. And I've never listened to a lot of podcasts. I've never been on one. It's definitely way less nerve-wracking than filming something, or I've done, little talks here and there.
Plus, we're pretty chill.
You guys are pretty chill, and it's pretty candid, chill. Right? I mean, you kind of just sort of talk, and it's not really super... yeah, if you can go a little off topic, it's not a big deal. You can mess up a name. You can kind of in real time fix it.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever consistently stayed on topic.
Yeah, it's hard to do. It's a wild conversation, right?
It is.
Yeah, that's true. But it's cool. It's new. I kind of like it. It's interesting. Yeah, I like this medium. It's good. Like I was saying before, I do like to sort of. Sort of interact with people who are interested in nature and help to kind of grow that within them. So it would be, if people are listening to this and are interested in conservation, you should definitely try to get involved.
Yeah.
For sure. And ask your question. I mean, even if that area is mm-hmm. surrounded by barbed wire, it's not because they aren't trying to be welcoming. It's because they're trying to help out the shrikes, right?
The shrikes.
Yeah, exactly,
I love them so much. They're so good.
Yeah.
So I got to say, thank you so much for being on the podcast with us. It's been great hearing about this because this is exactly what zoos work towards. And honestly, it's been great to hear about it because I haven't actually been down to Conservation Corner yet. So
you're missing out.
I totally
am. Yeah, come check it out.
I go there all the time. It's fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, anytime. And if anyone has any questions for us or for Mitch or for the Conservation Corner, please do not hesitate to email us at podcast@gvzoo.com. or DM us on our social media. I'm Callum Hughes.
And I'm Ashley Wysick.
And I'm Mitch from WPC, and you can find me on Instagram at taxonomitch. That's my handle.
Yeah.
And this has been
a wild conversation.